Are there questions? Or something someone wants to say?
Question about being still during the length of the meditation or a meditation. And it comes from practicing where we're asked not to even swallow during a sip.
Okay. So, because probably you can't hear the question. She's asking about the question of being physically still during a meditation, and she's coming from a background of where the practice is includes an emphasis on physical stillness. So you're asked not even to swallow during a meditation period in that form.
And so I've noticed trying to soften that as I've been resting and lying down, but I noticed that if my body wants to swallow, I then notice that I've been thinking. So there seems some usefulness in the rule of not swallowing, because I notice that when I want to swallow, I've been not.
Okay. So I'll reflect again. So Lisa G is saying, in her exploration of softening physically and resting, sometimes she feels like swallowing, and because of the practice of not swallowing, she notices that, I'll add, often when she wants to swallow, when she feels to swallow, her mind is distracted, the thinking has taken over, and then swallowing kind of comes, or almost comes, and she can stop because of her practice. So then,
so I guess it's just a question about, or maybe there's no question. Yes, I'm trying to, or investigating the usefulness of not shifting when my body wants to shift, or not shuffling, or staying with pins and needles, or staying with pain.
There's a great line from one Zen teacher: if you want to meet God, sit still. And then in Lisa's exploration of that kind of form, that kind of direction, there comes a question, though, about having a rule. Isn't it? And that for a while, having a rule can start to bring a more subtle, sensitive awareness. Noticing, we could take it as swallowing helps me notice the mind better now. Having been taught to notice swallowing about to happen, now swallowing helps notice mind is taking over, thinking is taking over. But then we're still left with this rule that's in your face, and your voice is uncomfortable to have the rule.
Yeah.
So first we can say, like, we befriend swallowing because swallowing helps us notice that thinking has taken over. And when thinking takes over, often we've lost track of what else there is in life. And so we thank swallowing for letting us know, which is already a shift. And then, because you're in, Lisa, you, along with many of us, are in a time in your life where you feel a big transformation going on. And so, why not take into account this discomfort with the rule? And so, instead of turning away from the rule or whatever, but like, okay, what is the rule exactly and how, what shall we play? So I would like to suggest, for example, a fully movement practice at least once a day, where you stay moving, for example, for whatever, half an hour or something like that. And that's the only rule, is that you must move. But movement might be swallowing, or it might be. And then to notice swallowing, even again more intimately, because not all swallowing is connected to distracted thinking. So it seems to happen sometimes when we relax and deepen that there, this is going to sound really strange, if it hasn't been strange enough already, talking about swallowing. Sometimes when we're kind of in, something's released in the mouth that's good to swallow. It is said to be good to swallow that. Like, let's call it meditative juice happens, and it's good for us. So even if, let's, many times, swallowing is reminding us to notice what's the quality of the mind. Are we in touch with aliveness, with our deep wish, or with life as our friend? But not all swallowing needs to follow the rule, and doesn't necessarily. So, and then kind of in summary, if we just say, like, it sounds like the practice of awareness of swallowing by not swallowing has had its fruitfulness, and now you leave it behind. And when it's needed, it may arise. You might be on a bus and you suddenly notice, and swallowing or the wish to swallow helps you come into alignment as a friend. But you don't need to stay with the friend all the time anymore. Maybe. And this is an important, it's an example of a really important movement, that when a friendship with a practice has been formed through experience. So we've noticed that when I feel a strong emotion and I remember that I breathe, and I do that on purpose many, many times, after a while, when needed, it happens. So I don't need to hold on to that friend. It will come when needed. Maybe. And also, as often happens with the questions, it's a good way of leading into my talk, which is about leadership. You can call it lightening leadership. So when we have a practice like don't swallow, or we have a practice like rest, or don't talk, or feel your feet, or whatever. There's a power struggle. So it might be a good idea at the beginning to accept there's a power struggle. Partly, I want to experience something differently, so I'm willing to take something from outside for a while. But something is uncomfortable in us with someone else gave me the direction. And that discomfort, someone else told me, don't swallow. Something in me, it can happen, I'm not saying to take this direction, but for Lisa, something in her said, yeah. Something that was deep, not just wanting to be a good girl, but something in her that was deep, wanted to experiment with what happens if I don't swallow. And I like the example because to me it makes me laugh inside. Because it's kind of extreme. And simple. And anyone could practice for 5 minutes or 5 days, don't swallow, and see what comes. And probably we won't hurt ourselves or. But maybe it's really important in that in the beginning when we're feeling that direction from outside, which we're partly open to and partly not open to, if we just pause and really feel if somewhere deep inside does accept that direction temporarily. Because we do not want to accept it as something that we want to try to be good at, just to be good at it. It's important. So Krishnamurti, J. Krishnamurti says, we have been dead and not known it. We have been dead and not known it. Because we have imitated and followed, we have blindly exploited beliefs. So it's difficult English. I want to ask, like I did on the first retreat, how many people, English is not your first native language? Good. So if you thought you were the only one not understanding, the native speaker. Again, a freedom to please stop me, ask, and it will help everyone. And that it's normal to have a harder time understanding a native English speaker if you're not a native English speaker. So the first line, we might understand the words, we have been dead and not known it, but we might not know what is he talking about. We may have a sense, we're not sure. So let's see what he says next, what he said next in the 1940s. Because we have imitated and followed. Because we've looked around and tried to copy what we saw. Because we've wanted someone to tell us what to do so that we could then try to do that. And it's a packed sentence. Because we have imitated and followed, okay? Because we didn't feel for a deeper, yeah, something feels a yes to not swallow for a while, or to not talk for a while. Maybe because there was not a sense that there's something inside that could lead. We looked for something that could lead, and we didn't recognize leadership. And so we looked what we could follow, and we tried to find someone to tell us what to do, and there are a lot of people who want to tell you what to do. And so then we do what they say, or we try to do what they say. Because we have imitated and followed, we have blindly exploited beliefs. So blindly, without seeing. So we've given up our eyes. I would suggest that we do give up our eyes for a while. And we go without seeing, but with feeling. Not trying to see and understand and recognize what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, when we're doing it. But feeling our way along, step by step. And seeing later what has happened. Recognizing and understanding afterwards what we practiced. We're nervous being blind when we're following in that way that's copying, imitating from a deep insecurity. We want something to replace our eyes, and we don't go to what we feel in this moment as our best guess. We go to belief. This is what Krishnamurti is saying. Another way to say it is, when we're nervous, when we're unsure, when we feel under pressure, we tend to go to thinking, trying to figure it out. And now if we open the whole subject of imitation, and what is imitation and what isn't imitation? And we try to think a thought that's not an imitation. We try to find a body posture that's not an imitation. Even in the trying, we would be tending to go the wrong direction. We'd be tending to going up to the head and to pressure. But after a while, when we don't find a thought that's not imitation, that's not following someone else's lead, then sometimes we can kind of give up and find that we're still alive. And something else is happening. And then as soon as we think, that's not imitation, it's gone again. Our sense of contact with not imitation, with some other kind of living that could lead us. There's a poem called Once Only by Denise Levertov, who was an American poetess. It's from a book of her poems that's called This Great Unknowing. And it's poems that she wrote but were not published until after she died. And we'll just take our time with the poem because it's a poem written in English by a native English speaker, which often I don't dare to just bring to a talk in a group outside the United States. But so the title is Once Only. All which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, all which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit. So now I'm going to say it again in different words so you can then hear her words. So everything that grant, in a way she's saying because of the way she lays it on the page, everything that was given that has a quality like flame or like song, and has a quality of being given, but also gives joy. So everything that gave joy, that was given. We thought, our thinking goes like this, I'll do it again, I'll go back there. I'll do that, I'll be that, I'll revisit. I'll go back to that that gave me joy, though it was in the moment a flame, a song, and just given, and giving joy. All which, because it was flame and song, and granted us, given us, joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit. Turns out to have been what it was, that once, only. So anything that brought joy, all of it that came, that our thinking said, yeah, let's do that again. The thinking is like good intention. That was good, let's do it again. Let's be that. And so our thinking and our intention gets excited, gets enthusiastic, and starts going, and loses what it was. Because what it was turns out to have been what it was, that once only. Every initiation did not begin a series, a build-up. So now she's using a new word for what that was, that flame, that song that gave joy, that was given. She's calling it an initiation, which I agree with the word. It's one reason that I love this poem for today. But it's not an initiation in the sense of one and then two and then three and then four times doing the same thing. It's an initiation into a kind of place where things are given and give joy with the quality of a flame. So we can't catch it, but it's bright and it's distinctly real. We can't catch the flame, but we can feel and see the brightness and the heat, undeniably. The song we can't catch, but it enters ourselves and does something there that we know not what it is. When we let it be given, and we let that giving and receiving be joy, we let life grant us that song, that flame. And in letting life grant us, give us, that's joy in initiation. That's not the beginning of a time period. It has the quality of beginning, of newness, of never before, never again. It has a quality of initiation in the sense of before and after, it's different. In the sense of going somewhere we haven't been, somewhere deeper or wider. But not an initiation like starting to stack up that kind of meditation. It can't be stacked. It can't be collected. Every initiation did not begin a series. So she's talking about a timeless quality, being out of time. Every initiation did not begin a build-up. The marvelous did happen in our lives, she says. Our stories are not drab with its absence. So the fact that we can't catch it and keep it and count it, any of them, or she's saying every initiation did not begin, cannot be stacked, cannot be counted. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. Drab would be like not colorful, not living. So our stories are not dead with the absence of the marvelous, the wonderful. There is the wonderful in our lives. But don't expect now to return for more. So it's another good line with simple words, finally. Don't expect now to return for more. So what happened that seemed to happen in our story, but had a quality of being timeless, we can't go back to it. When we return, when we turn, when we try to catch it, we're out of touch with the stream it comes from. So don't expect now to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Unique means nothing like it. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. So I love the poetess not using technical spiritual language, but saying as now or never, without saying it didn't happen, doesn't happen, won't happen, but she's saying don't expect. But do try to acknowledge. So kind of not just know it, but I get the feeling of acknowledge, like let it come again. And she says, she calls the body halo. So the halo is in the religious pictures. Not only, I was thinking, how many traditions have that? The circle around the head. So there's all the Buddhas with the circle around the head too, and there's all the Marys with the circle around the head, with the baby Jesus with the circle around the head, etc. And as soon as someone's paperwork goes through that they're officially a saint, they suddenly have a halo around their head. But she says body with the hyphen, the line, halo. So she's pointing out that in her experience, these experiences have a body that we can't quite catch, but they have a body that's the kind of brightness that we can't be sure of in the way we wish, we think we wish we could be sure of. We think we wish we could be sure of. And something in us is so glad we can't be sure of it in that way, that in the moment we can acknowledge, like we can know in a different way the body halo of the next song. Body halo of flames. Means we can't touch it, but we can know it in some way, in some felt way, with some other kind of eyes. Whatever more there will be, unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. Would it be good to have that be enough, or would it be good to hear it again, the whole thing? Yeah. Once Only by Denise Levertov. I'll let you get settled so you can hear. We're reading the whole thing one more time. The whole poem. Thank you for... Once Only. All which, because it was flame and song and granted us joy, we thought we'd do, be, revisit, turns out to have been what it was. That once only. Every initiation did not begin a series, a build-up. The marvelous did happen in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. But don't expect now to return for more. Whatever more there will be unique as those were unique. Try to acknowledge the next song in its body halo of flames as utterly present as now or never. What I hear now in reading the poem this last time is the importance of the word return. Don't expect now to return. Staying open, letting that pass through us as if we are translucent, that light can come through, the flame song comes through. And staying open to a subtle calling, a subtle lightening leadership. Even when there isn't a body halo anymore, to try to acknowledge. Not even a body halo left. Just our own not returning, not expecting to return, she says very specifically. Don't expect now to return for more. The turning may happen, but we could keep turning back to not lack. Turning back to not knowing how it will come. How the next song will happen, or from where. We have two tendencies that get in our way. And if we keep in mind Lisa's question about don't swallow, as we hear about my perception of our two tendencies that get in the way. Even though we have this distracted mind, and we've asked the mind continually day in and day out, even in our dreams, to be distracted, to multitask, etc., there's still the tendency to be distracted by something. So to pay attention to something, and then another, and then another. And that's why it can be a relief to train the mind to pay attention to one thing, but then to let go of that one thing when that practice has become fruitful. So it's not about the pay attention to one thing. It's about getting towards not needing to have attention paid to something in order to feel utterly present now or never. So if you notice, the thinking is going to this, and then to that, and then to that, and then to that, and then to that, and then to that. Or it might be on this, 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 this. It's more or less the same. When it's compulsive, when it's unstoppable. And we need to follow through to find out what is the pressure that pushes the mind to pay attention to something all the time, that doesn't let it just be open. And I would say it's the deep insecurity that are not knowing that that is normal right now, the deep insecurity, and has been normal for thousands of years also. It's not only we poor modern people. And it has been normal to let the insecurity push us. And even our best intentions get pushed by this tendency. So the tendency to attend to things. In common language, we'll say to be busy. So if I'm not busy with so-called daily life, then I'm going to be busy with my meditation. I'm going to be busy paying attention to my breath. But don't let there not be something to be busy with and leave me alone. And then the second tendency we have that maybe is very much encouraged in the modern culture is the tendency to focus on the negative. And so instead of talking much about that, I want to talk much more about something else. But just feeling. We feel productive when we work on a problem. And we feel shaky often when we're just enjoying. Then we would say, nothing much is happening. There's just some lightness, there's just some joy, there's just a feeling of calm or belonging. I wonder what I'm doing wrong. Maybe I'm missing something. So, we have something to go on. We have those moments that were given that gave joy. But again, our tendency would be, out of insecurity, to want to find them, get them, and make them lead us by, okay, it was sunset and I was in that point in the rice field and I was doing that practice or I was feeling my feet or whatever. If we could not expect to return, we might find ourselves in the same spot at the same time, but not allowing that expectation to return, not allowing it. Allowing our human sensitivity, our human receptivity, to what is given now. So not allowing the turning towards imitation, even imitation of my own experience. and allowing space for feeling this subtle leadership inside. And that's what I want to talk about more for a few minutes. So a main practice that we can do to keep leaving room for the subtle leadership, the lightening leadership, something that leads not by pressure and not by heaviness. The job we have is to notice when there is pressure, which is coming usually from guilt and shame. Try to get it right, probably getting it wrong, etc. And tracking our progress. So continually with heart, with softness, but continually putting that aside. The tracking how I'm doing. Did I get it right? I'll never get it right, and so on. Continually putting aside that what's coming is not okay. That what's given, what I feel, what I sense is being given now is not enough, is not okay. Continually putting that aside. And then we'll start to really get a feeling, a sense feeling of the heaviness of the pressure, the heaviness of the right-wrong mode. And the heaviness of allowing shame to be in charge. And we'll also get the feeling for the lightness when we don't let it be in charge. When we just very precisely take away the interpretation and judgment on top of what's being given, and we allow what's being given. So we're not repressing and throwing away what's being given. We're just plugging away, putting aside, putting aside, putting aside. Shame. The sense that there's something wrong in what is given. When we know that what is given is a body halo of flames, is a song, it's something we cannot catch. So there's nothing wrong in not catching it. And we can trust that quality of like a flame, it's here and gone, like a song, it's here and gone. But definite and marvelous. We start to really get the feeling of that light atmosphere, the lightness, in which our job is easy. Even the most difficult job, come what may, is easy. As we start to notice our fascination with the negative and with painful and with suffering, and our tendency to give importance to that and to give importance to what is therefore work and important, we start to leave room for that quality of lightness when we don't let shame move us. We just carefully but with a sharp knife cut away the dead wood of shame. And we leave the living tree of our actual experience, whatever it is. Then we start to more easily distinguish two kinds of pleasure. There's the pleasure when I get what I want, or if we want to be kind of Buddhist and be really thorough, we can say when I get what I want, when I don't get what I don't want, etc. So I don't get what I don't want, I do get what I do want. And that brings some kind of confirmation to us. We interpret that as confirmation, and we feel release. So that's one kind of pleasure. My conditioning says that when someone smiles at me, then that is a good sign. And so I interpret it as confirmation, and I allow myself to be at ease on the planet for 1 second. And then I go after the person, but maybe I need another smile, or maybe I better smile back. Maybe they didn't see me smile back. Maybe they were smiling at someone else, etc. And so that pleasure and how it is, which is like that. It's a busy pleasure. There's nothing wrong with the busy pleasure. For example, let's say my past conditioning means that I like chocolate. It's not that chocolate is intrinsically has to be liked. I like chocolate. When someone offers chocolate, I often say, yes, thank you, I'll take two. But that aside, let's not get into the conversation about that kind of pleasure pain, the busy kind. Let's leave more room and leave more room and always more room for what we can call deepening pleasure, a pleasure that takes us deeper. And it has the quality of lightness, and it has the quality of going where you don't want to go, lightly. And it has the pleasure of going where you're afraid to go because it's so good as well. It doesn't mind what you like and don't like. And it doesn't have, it's a leadership that we can follow, we can accept. It's an authentic lead. It's not an imitation. It doesn't obey rules about swallowing and silence and chocolate. And so it's about deconstructing what we expect to be a lead or a leader or a leadership. We expect the leader to be very easy to feel, with lots of muscles, loud voice that anyone can hear from the whole ashram, stomping feet. We're going this way with clear directions, with a map. So it's not just we're taking this step now and we have no clue what happens next. It's this is the way and this is the map, and tomorrow at 5 p.m. we will have tea. It's not that. It's like a leaf falling from a tree, and that movement has a beauty to it and takes other factors into account. It doesn't say, I'm going straight to the ground because I'm dead. Factors come in and it falls, and eventually it happens to be on the ground. It might happen to be lifted up again. It might not hit the ground. It might land on a branch. Are there any questions or comments? Now here at the end.
So it seems like behind what you're saying is the most important thing for a practitioner to do is to just always be in touch with aliveness, newness, no expectation, just a being with things, no judging, no going back, this worked, I felt good, nothing, just everything is with the newness of the moment. And
And the softness.
And the softness, yeah. Okay. Yeah, is that what you're saying?
We can say yes, as long as that's not the idea that I judge myself against.
Oh, no.
And also, if we remember the don't swallow thing and how helpful that was for Lisa. So yes, and anything goes. So when Denise Levertov, I want to call her Denise, when Denise says, don't expect to return. It's really precise language. She doesn't say don't turn. She said don't expect to return. We might find ourselves in the same place at the same time with that same song. And not like, oh my God, I wasn't supposed to come back here. And sometimes we feel deeply insecure and we don't feel the contact with aliveness, don't we?
Okay.
And it can really help to think, what did I do last time that really helped? I better try that. So it's not, we don't want to make any subtle new right wrong. Only, always, forever, now and never, utterly, anything. So yes, and anything goes. Yes, and not as an idea that we exploit because we're stuck in imitation and following.
Isn't this really a state of mind, a state of being? A state, a way.
Yeah, we can say a state and a way, yeah. Why not? And it has that, like, state and way. So it has this subtle, gentle, it happens to move. So it would be like in us, we would say, okay, who wants to be the leader? Who wants to go first? And let, if there's 50 of us in there, which there's probably 50,000, but the first 25, let them say yes and give them something else to do, but don't let them lead. And also, maybe not necessarily the other extreme, but something that's kind of as if just waiting to be called on to be, oh, okay, I could lead. Or why don't we just, what if we, like that. Okay?
Yeah? Just one minute.
No, don't be in a hurry.
Okay. It's, in some ways, to me, it seems like not that you're putting qualifications on anything, but a real state of perfection.
So that's when it's become an idea. Or let's redefine perfection. Because it's exactly the perfectionist thing that gets us into trouble. So perfect as it is given, completely received, allowed to give joy, and by happenstance we find that a step has been taken along the way without my noticing. That kind of perfection, like this great unknowing, a perfection that's we're not into knowing it as perfect, except in this felt deepening pleasure way, deepening lightening. Which with that, it is so perfect in the sense of complete, so it's made through. Perfect means made through. We let life be made through. We let it come through us completely. We let the step happen completely, not getting in the way by keeping track of my steps.
So it's not really a way.
Not in the way we want to have a way. but in the way that something deeper and gentler in us senses is possible. And when we notice our experience, when from deeply insecure, we try to make a way, we try to find a way, we try to copy a way, we start to notice it doesn't work. Until it's really perfect, made through in our own way.
It's almost like it's something else.
It's something else. Completely. But not far away. Not. Not unexperienced. The marvelous has happened in our lives. Our stories are not drab with its absence. So let's close for now with just a few moments together silently, comfortably. Adoring, so loving, full-heartedly, that the marvelous does happen. And it does come in both expected and unexpected ways. And we have the capacity to let it be given and let that give joy. And by the way, our way happens. Without so much worry. May all beings be peaceful.